Hey, welcome back to the Retire While You Work podcast. I'm Miles Zuger, a wealth advisor here at Adams Wealth Partners, joined by Carson Odom, who is also a wealth advisor here at Adams Wealth Partners. Going to be talking today about a topic that we get with clients who, you know, maybe they've been working with us for a while and they're now getting married, or it's a second marriage. And the topic that comes up is, what should we do about combining finances? I think there can be a lot of emotions around this subject. I mean, a lot of the way you think about money and respond to feelings around money is how you grew up and were raised around it. And so everybody's has a bit of a different experience with it and their own unique thoughts and ways that they handle it. And so when you then get married and talk about combining finances, a lot of those emotions kind of come back up, and there's no right or wrong way to go about it. But we just wanted to discuss today, you know, maybe a couple different ways to go about it or think about it when undertaking this for yourselves, if this is something that you're going through, or maybe you have a kid or a family member going through it and they just need a little bit of help and guidance. So I think just to get started, the first thing you can do is just have clear, open, and honest communication about what your wants are, how you feel about it, how you think about it, so that you're both on the same page. Carson, I would just flip it to you real quick and say, any other tips when getting started outside of just clear and open, honest communication?
I think whenever Rachel and I got married, it'll be almost 9 years. It'll be 9 years in May. And whenever we first got married, I remember one of the first things we did, you know, after our honeymoon was come back, and then we made a joint checking account, joint savings account, and all that sort of stuff. And it was just laid out straight up. Here's all of our finances. Mm-hmm. Here's the credit cards I have. Here's this savings I have, so on and so forth. And, you know, you can't, our choice was, okay, here's every little bit about our finances and we'll combine whatever we can. And, you know, credit cards, they have to stay in your individual name. You can't have a joint credit card. You can have an authorized user. And I actually think our main credit card that we use, it's in my name, but I have her as an authorized user, just with how we throw everything on that.
And cost, it can help to lower the cost if there's any sort of credit card fees and stuff like that as well.
Yep, that's right. But our view was, at least in how we did our banking and how we wanted to do that, was make a joint bank account, and she has access to it, whether or not she remembers a password, because she relies on me for all that stuff. That's another story. But she has access to it and just fully transparent on everything. And we chose to do the joint way, where it's a joint effort, her income, my income, it all goes together. And that's, it was just holistically our view of marriage and how we wanted to run our marriage, was we're one team, one set of bills. We contribute 100% each.
Not to get personal, but was that a tough conversation about joining it? Or were we both pretty much on the same page?
We were already on the same page, so that helps. And I think that's a conversation probably to have before you get married, before you tie the knot, to make sure you're on the same page there, because that could be a tough conversation. Like you said, yeah. I grew up in a household, and she did too, where it was the exact same. My mom and dad, hers, everything was in a joint bank account. Everything was shared. It's one household in essence, and it's not splitting bills.
Yeah. I got married about 4 years ago as well. And same thing, we chose a very similar route, to where we have, you know, we chose just to have one joint checking, one joint savings, all paychecks go into that, that checking. And then we kind of manage the savings based on how much is maybe in each account. But I think we were both raised pretty similar in that, you know, her parents came from a household where, for the most part, it was all in one account, I think. And same with my household, it was, you know, one, very similar to how we're doing it. And like you said, credit cards, I think the nice thing about that is, what my wife likes about it, she doesn't feel like I'm nitpicking her maybe on every Starbucks transaction or every coffee she wants to go out and get. So she can still do those kind of things without seeing that. But then by having, what I think helps us is just having all bills come out of one checking account. We know if there's like a high credit card bill or something, or what we feel is a high credit card bill, that like, hey, what did you spend that on this month? And just having clear, open communication about why there was maybe a higher charge. But for the most part, I think we're both on the same page, and it's worked for us as well.
I think that's, it's, you know, we've talked about looking at spending together, but I think it's also on the other side of that equation is the savings and the future planning, you know, as we have a joint bank account and we're combining our finances and how we spend money, it's the same as how whenever we save money and what we're working towards. You know, we have the same combined effort of why we're saving money, our goals, and it allows us to have a conversation of what are we doing this for? You know, this income we have coming in, what's our why behind it? And what are we saving for? And what are some goals? It just creates the joint effort, I feel like, of what marriage can be when you combine each other's effort and power and mindset towards not just your spending, but also your saving.
Yeah. Yep. I agree. And on the flip side, for maybe those that don't want to combine or just are choosing to keep things separate to some extent and share bills from separate accounts, what, you know, I think what we often see is maybe in that scenario, folks sit down and they decide, okay, I'm going to be responsible for the mortgage. You're going to be responsible for groceries and maybe some of the other expenses that come up. Or what we also see is, I think that gets a little trickier, maybe because if there is any weird feelings about finances, then obviously those are going to be different amounts that you're spending on things every month. But for some people that works. And I think the other way that some people go about it when they still want to keep things separate, but then have some sort of middle ground where they're still sharing things is to have one joint checking account that basically serves as paying all the household bills. And then each spouse or partner also has their own checking and maybe savings, and the other spouse has their own checking and savings. And you have the conversation around, okay, how much do we want to have from an emergency expense perspective with, you know, maybe it's 3 months, maybe it's 6 months inside this joint account so that we know we're good on household bills for a few months. And then you can kind of do whatever you want with any excess money in your account outside of obviously blowing that money in Vegas or somewhere like that. But having reasonable expectations around that so that you know that still we're paying expenses from a joint perspective, but we're also choosing to keep things separate to some extent, as well as kind of the other, what I think are the other two ways to go about it. Or if you choose to want to keep things maybe a little bit separate, doing it that way. That's all, that's assuming both spouses work. Obviously that's not always the case. If maybe only one spouse works, I think, you know, that's, you can set things up differently from that perspective as well.
What about, In your personal history, did y'all get married and like, did you have debt coming into your marriage?
We did not. We were fortunate to have not had much debt coming into our marriage. So that wasn't a big, or at least none that, I would say none that we weren't aware about. It wasn't like one of us had a huge school loan that we had. Like my wife was fortunate. She played soccer in college, so she had a scholarship, had that paid for. I went to a relatively more inexpensive school, and so I was able to get that paid off pretty quickly when I was done. So there was no huge debt that we were unaware of. But again, that's a, you know, with the cost of college, if one of the spouses maybe went and was a doctor or a lawyer and you come out with a couple hundred thousand of medical school debt or law school debt, I mean, that can weigh on you for a number of years. And it's definitely something to be aware of. Obviously, in those professions, you have the income to be able to support a big debt load like that. But for some people, that's just, you know, if they came from a household that was very low debt, that can be a bit like, that can just be a huge number they see and are just can't really comprehend seeing a couple hundred thousand in debt like that.
And regardless of how you treat it, it's just like we talked about at the start of it, just be transparent with it. You know, going into it is like, okay, here's this $100,000 school bill. How are we going to do this? Is it a combined effort? Is it, I'm taking a percentage of my income that I'm bringing in and I'm throwing at it for X amount of years until it can be paid off. There's no perfect answer in how to view that. I think it's already been clear, and our approach to how we do money is once you get married, it's combining everything. So it's essentially now one household, and a $100,000 school debt now becomes a household debt. You know, it's viewed, yep. You know, that's on, you know, my philosophy and I guess belief on, once you cross that line in a marriage, that it's now a complete joint effort. So, and that's fine. And especially as long as it's something that the other party is aware of and you're transparent about.
Yep. And I'll just add, if you don't want to join, that's fine. Also, it's just having clear expectations of who's responsible for what or how you're going to handle things. And I think a lot of that can be done early on through a couple of things. One, setting down and discussing a budget. It doesn't necessarily have to mean, you know, a budget down to a penny on what we're spending things on, but just a reasonable idea of you know, what it takes to run the household every month with just base expenses, and then any other expenses of long trips or hobbies that you guys might have together or separately. Just what are those expenses going to cost us each month? So you have an idea of, hey, with the mortgage and all of our bills, it takes us $5,000, making these numbers up, takes us $5,000 to run the household each month. Helps you set that budget as well as how much you need to have in savings for an emergency fund perspective. Be curious if you have any other thoughts on that as well.
Yeah, I was going to ask, how often do you feel like y'all like have the financial talk?
Yeah, I mean, that's something, kind of one of our New Year's resolutions this year was start having it once a month. So like every first Sunday of the month after kind of that month ends, and you can look back and see what expenses were for the month, just kind of sitting down and just running through just transactions and saying, okay, all this looks pretty normal. Here are maybe a couple things that are out of place. Like, what was this? And just kind of asking a couple questions, not being too intrusive on it, but just coming in the realization, okay, probably didn't need to do that, but it's fine. It's not going to, you know, not allow us to pay the mortgage next month or something like that. And just kind of having that conversation once a month, again, first Sunday of every month, just sitting down and reflecting on the past month to see just kind of where we are from an overall perspective. So what about you? How often do you guys have that conversation?
It may average out to be once a month. We're not super routine about it. I stay on top of it, of course, just about every other day or so, categorizing stuff and looking at it. But I think, you know, as far as like really sit down and talking, at least once a quarter, I feel like we'll sit down and say, okay, here's where we're at. But sometimes it's like once a week in passing, and we'll be talking about something in general. But maybe we should get better about having like a full sit down to discuss things and get a big picture. And I think annually, we definitely have a big time where we sit down and look and say, okay, here's how this past year went with inflation. Mm-hmm. Here's how much more expensive everything was over this past year. And, you know, sometimes especially us in the phase of life that we're in with, now we have two kids, groceries are more expensive, inflation, you can feel the effects of. So we want to beat ourselves down with like, oh my gosh, we spent this much on food. When the reality is, I think food inflation is a lot higher than maybe what they're saying. And it's high in general. So
last year at one point I saw a stat that was like the average family, it was like $15,000 more expensive from 2022 to 2023, just what it took them to run the household. I can't remember where I saw that stat at, but it was somewhere online.
That's
a lot. Talking about inflation numbers.
And knowing that, you know, despite the fact that our expenses are up a little bit, it's reality of the world that we're in. You know, we've in our lifetimes, we've never lived through an inflationary period where it's truly affected us. And I think we're definitely living through it right now. So,
Yeah. And so that's kind of a little bit on debt and budgeting. And then I think, you know, on top of that, Carson kind of hinted at it a little bit maybe, but was just saving for the future. So having the conversation around, you know, even if it's early on, just what does the next 10, 20, 30, 40 years through the rest of our lives look like, so that you can, and it kind of comes back to budgeting, but just knowing, hey, how much do we want to be putting into 401ks if you have one, or IRAs or other investment accounts, to be able to save for the future and at some point have a retirement, or just set money aside for maybe some project, new house, et cetera, down the road that you want to be saving for and accumulating for and investing for. So there's obviously a bunch of different philosophies around that as well. And it's dependent on people's risk tolerances, but just having an idea of the full picture from a budgeting, debt perspective, investment perspective, again, comes back to the first point of open communication. The clearer you can be on the finance side of things, I think, you know, the better it can be. I think when you look at reasons for divorce, I know finance is always like one of the top one or two reasons. So the earlier you can get on that conversation and just be prepared for it, I think the better.
It's good. I think risk tolerance is one thing that can be dominated by one party a lot of times in what we see in relationships. So I think when it comes to risk tolerance and investments, make sure you both have a say in how your portfolio is going to be constructed. You know, if you're young, generally the advice is going to be, if your time horizon's 20 plus years out, to be pretty aggressive, but that doesn't mean each of your voices shouldn't be heard in how you feel about that risk tolerance.
Yeah.
I think we're, you know, above a lot of people, understand the fact that emotions are real, and you can't just be 100% robotic when it comes to investing. So talk your emotions out. If you have a financial advisor like us, talk through it. Make sure both of your voices are heard whenever choosing a risk tolerance for your investments.
Yep. And then just to wrap it up, regular conversations around this stuff. I know we touched on that a little bit earlier also, but I think it doesn't need to be every day. It doesn't need to be every week, but I think monthly, kind of quarterly, just even if they're quick 10, 15, 20 minute check-ins, just to make sure you're on the same page. You just can't go wrong with that and the communication side of it. At least I don't think from a financial advisor's perspective.
I agree. Yeah. I think weekly might be, I don't want to say overkill, but you know, there's not a lot of major changes, especially if, you know, you're not getting paid, but every other week, you know, there's not going to be, where you could do budgeting on a weekly basis. And if you use an envelope system or something like that, maybe a short check-in on a weekly basis. I think at least quarterly to do it, just to sit down, even if it's 30 minutes, just sit down and say, okay, here's where we're at financially. Here's how our spending's been. Here's how our savings have been. Hey, we've sucked at eating out the past couple of months. Let's try to get better, you know, this next quarter, things like that. Yeah. It doesn't have to be just super rigorous and getting onto each other. It's more of a collective, hey, here's where we did bad. Just like any team involved, it's all reflection. Yep. It's all refinement, trying to get better to reach your goals, and being on the same page, like you said. So I think at least monthly, if not monthly, quarterly, to have a good sit down with each other to get better and make a plan for the next.
Yep. Yeah. And just talking about any challenges or maybe some goals that you want to achieve too. So you just, yeah, can't go wrong there. Thanks for joining us today. This is, I think, a very helpful topic, probably just to talk through for us too as well, but hopefully for anybody that may be listening as well. And we're going to keep doing these. So if there's ever anybody that has a topic they'd like for us to touch on, feel free to shoot us an email. We'd love to, yeah, have a little bit of help from many viewers maybe and discuss topics that they might have or want us to listen to. So thanks for joining us on the Retire While You Work podcast. Any opinions are those of myself and not necessarily those of Raymond James. Expressions of opinion are as of this date and are subject to change without notice. The information contained in these podcasts do not purport to be a complete description of the securities market or developments referred to in this material. The information has been obtained from sources considered to be reliable, but we do not guarantee that the foregoing material is accurate or complete. Every investor situation is unique, and you should consider your investment goals, risk tolerance, and time horizon before making any investment. Prior to making an investment decision, please consult with your financial advisor about your individual situation. Any hypothetical examples are for illustration purposes only. Actual investor results will vary. Raymond James does not provide legal or tax services. Please discuss these matters with the appropriate professional.